Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. The Inner Game is about how we attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that helps us to make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. Today's episode is a talk I gave on December 1st, 2024, called The Big Let Go, about how we can surrender to the power of the present moment and let go into possibilities that we can help to bring about through our own commitment to community and clarity around what we value most. I hope this serves you.
The U2 song that we just heard, there are phrases in that have been like koans for me for so long, things that I've been, that keep coming back to me. Like that line, you're packing a suitcase for a place none of us has been. A place that has to be believed to be seen. You know, this is so evocative of where we're at right now. We're gathering what we need, whether it's relationships or deepening of relationship with ourself. That is what we'll need for this place that we haven't been to before, because it's the next piece of evolution. So we haven't seen it yet. And it's so important that we be able to envision, that we be able to feel it, that we be able to really know the pieces of it, the pieces of truth that we've been polishing like beautiful gems our whole life, that we know our parts of this next piece, this next place where we're going. And that line, the only baggage you can bring is all that you can't leave behind. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to get into that, but so much of it is about letting go. Because we've got to keep dragging around all that stuff that we don't think we can leave behind. Or that we don't even, so much of this is subconscious stuff. That I know so many of us, we've been looking deeply, we've been doing the introspection for a long time. And we still get surprised by those things that, oh, I'm still dragging that along. So the only baggage we can bring is what we're not consciously putting down, letting go. And it's not like we're bad and wrong for any of this. It's just stuff to become more aware of in the strength of our elderhood, to really take to heart and to find that courage to really make that next leap. These are times of lightening our load. We're really being asked to simplify on every level. And it's this heaviness that our ego says keeps us insulated, keeps us safe, but really it only keeps us isolated. So it's the openness that we're being called to. The security that we find in each other. So we have to start to really live it. Those things, that pieces of our soul purpose that we've been, that we know, but maybe things that we've been hesitant to really give ourselves to. So this is different for everybody. So we're being called to create this new world. And while we're adapting to so much that's collapsing in our present one. So it's this liminal space that we find ourselves in that I've talked about a lot in the past. It's a really creative space. And I think this is a big piece of the big let go, is harnessing the power of this surrender that we're being asked to do, this surrender of what we've thought of as success, as what we've thought of as security, of even what we've thought of as ourselves, our identity, and to see what's possible when we can let more of that go. It's a big reset. Eckhart Tolle talked about this in The New Earth. Love that book. Some of you may be familiar with it. He talks so much about surrendering to the now and letting go of resistance to what's happening in this present moment and really embracing what is. So often we find ourselves fighting with what's going on in the present moment, and it really keeps us from our creative power. So that, I think that's an important thing, just to notice when that comes up. And to be able to reset our relationship to our personal power, what we think we're capable of, for whatever reason. Oh, I'm not capable of this anymore, or whatever. To really let go of our limiting beliefs of what we think is possible based on the past. Because what's going to be possible will be based on something we haven't experienced yet, but we have to hold to that knowing of what we know must be possible, what Charles Eisenstein calls the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. So I always look at sort of what's the significance of this day, December 1st. Is there anyone here who knows what happened today in 1955? This day, almost 70 years now, 69 years ago today, Rosa Parks was arrested for sitting down and not standing up, not giving up her seat on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. Yeah, it's like, whew, the potency of that act. I mean, and I've been thinking about it through the context of letting go. And what a moment that was to let go of her fear of being harmed, to let go of her fear of being imprisoned, to let go of maybe this won't make any difference, because so much hadn't made any difference in her life that she'd had to witness for so long. Even after, so many lives lost, and we still see that happening today. She often says when she talks about the event that people think, oh, she was this tired old woman. And I think we have this idea of her that way somehow. But she was 42. She wasn't tired. She was tired of one thing. She was tired of giving in. She was so tired of that. And so that was like the motivation, I don't care what happens. I don't care if nothing happens. I'm doing this. And she also said that she knew she had the strength of her ancestors with her. I think that's something we've lost some of in our Western culture, is our identification with and the strength that can be gained from our ancestry. So I think it's important for us to sort of find that identification with whatever ancestors show up for us. She also had, in all of the uncertainty of that moment, she had the total certainty of alignment with her values. And that's something we see in all of the really big paradigm shifting change makers over time, is that they have this total coherence of energy from the alignment with their values that can shift material reality, that can shift the world. And not even with saying anything, just being in that alignment shifted so much in that moment. So this is also a new moon, a lot of energy happening today. It's happened close to midnight last night, actually. But it's about part of the energy of this moon is to take aim towards what we want and take a leap of faith toward that new adventure. To trust that the arrow of our intention will land in the right place at the right time to open pathways to a new chapter of authenticity and personal responsibility and strength. And as we go deeper into ourselves and discover hidden desires and inspirations from the past, we can make a commitment to overcome our fear of change and move into this new chapter with confidence, good boundaries, and authentic motivation, that motivation that comes from our soul purpose. The other pieces of being able to really make this evolutionary upgrade is to have that total faith in source. I think this is for sure what Rosa Parks had, is just total faith in her creator and in her truth, which definitely came from the communities that she was a part of. Such a strong sense of identity with the activist communities that she'd been a part of and had played a leadership role in for years at that point. So part of this time is also to really ground with our root chakra, that first chakra that is the foundation of ourself. And it's also where a lot of that subconscious stuff can come from. So really grounding ourselves, that connection to the earth, that's something that's so necessary daily. Because I think a lot of, and I see this from so many different sources, what will be possible will be because of a shift in our relationship to our Mother Earth, to come into more of right relationship to the earth. So there's also something happening December 2nd and through the 4th. There's a conjunction with the royal star of the West, Antares. And when the sun crosses Antares, it's an opportunity to honor our journey. We've all been in this game a while, and we've learned a lot, and we have a lot to offer. And to really honor that, this is an important opportunity for that, to let go of regrets and to celebrate the love we have received and achieved. Because regrets keep us tied to the past. It's the ego stuff that doesn't want us to forget those missteps because it thinks it'll keep us safe somehow, but really it just keeps us limited. To maybe just think of, what are those regrets that maybe come up from time to time? And just let them go. Be in a different relationship with them. Maybe be grateful for where they've brought you to now.
If you've just joined, you are listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. This is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to a talk I gave recently on December 1st, 2024, titled The Big Let Go, about how to more powerfully meet the uncertainty of these times. We'll pick up that talk here.
This is really a time of transmutation, death and rebirth, and it guides us below the surface to our subconscious beliefs and patterns and shadows, so we can clear those for a new way of being. I've seen the prompt to think about writing yourself a letter of forgiveness, releasing yourself from any regrets or perceived mistakes. Sometimes when we just do that ritual of writing a letter to ourselves, it can be a really powerful way to release. And this is sort of an example of the unlearning that we're being tasked with, to unlearn the old ways that are not working, that are not sustainable, that are collapsing Mother Earth and many of the systems on her. This is a time to really, again, to come into right relationship with the land and each other. So according to the Anishinaabe Ojibwe, a tribe from the Great Lakes region of North America, they talk about the prophecy of the seven fires. And many believe we are currently living in the seventh fire period, which signifies a time of critical choice where humanity can either choose a path of destruction or continue on the one that we're on, or a path of renewal and harmony with nature. So there it is again. How do we come into that right relationship with nature that will make something new possible? And to light the eighth fire, indigenous people will come forward. This is part of the seventh fire prophecy. The indigenous people will come forward with their knowledge, connecting with the Western knowledge. And from this union, a new people will emerge, lighting that eighth and final fire. So we're seeing the emergence of previously uncontacted indigenous folks, like the Kogi in Colombia that I talked about last time I spoke here, the Achuar people in the Amazon rainforest who are working with the Pachamama Alliance, the Pintupi in Australia, the Mashkopiru in Peru, these ancient tribes bringing their knowledge forward courageously because they're under attack and they know times are dire. So what is needed to become the new people of the eighth fire? So much of it is unlearning these ways that we've become so attached to in our dominant white supremacy, like whatever it is, thinking we've got it going on here and look what we've done. It's to let go of what we think we already know. Let go of what we think motivates others. Let go of what we think is right. Let go of cause and effect and how we think things work in the world. Let go of judgments of others, judgments of the future, judgments of ourselves. Let go of what we think is possible, what's not possible. It's going to take a tremendous amount of humility and beginner's mind. I think that's the biggest piece, is for us to come into a place of deep, deep humility about what we think is possible. And also at the same time, find the confidence in what we know is deeply true. Those beautiful pieces of truth that we've been honing for a long time. Werner Erhard, of the EST movement. Some of you may remember that training that happened in the 70s, which became Landmark, a personal development curriculum. He talked so much about a world that works for everyone. And again, I see this in a lot of wisdom traditions coming up right now as sort of the measure of what we value as this new people, as what it is that makes a beautiful world. And it goes right along with the wisdom of the oneness, the unity consciousness, because that's what a world that works for everyone would naturally be, the outbirth of oneness, because we're all inextricably tied together. So our actions, our every action would be an expression of a world that works for everyone. And I think this is at the heart of that talisman that Gandhi talked about. When you're in doubt about something or feeling despair or trying to figure out what to do, he said, think of the poorest and the weakest people, the most oppressed people that you can think of, and ask yourself if your action will be useful for them. Will it lift them into freedom spiritually and materially? Will it restore them to control over their own life and destiny? He talked about this is at the heart of this world that works for everyone. It's hard to put our actions through that filter, but it's also simple and clear. According to the Global Footprint Network, if everyone lived like Americans, the world would need 5 Earths to support the global demand for resources. So we need to start to take this seriously. when do we really get up close and personal with that? With our consumer choices, with our stuff, with our travel, our homes, our waste, our health. You know, how do we live in a way that creates a world that works for everyone? Because right now, we're living in a way that's taking all the resources away from others. That's not creating health and opportunity and love for them. And it's hard because we've been enculturated to think that living in this expression of abundance is sort of this high spiritual expression. And it's kind of time to dial that back, I think, and really look at it in a different way. So I want to end with pieces of this book I just got turned on to. It just came out this year. It's called What If We Get It Right? And I haven't dug into it a lot, but what I have is amazing. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson is a Harvard graduate, and she co-founded the Urban Ocean Lab, a think tank for the future of coastal cities, who are not going to be around a whole lot longer. She's the co-editor of the best-selling climate anthology, All We Can Save. And I love that she's a passionate solutionist. She's really focused on this vision of the beauty of what we can be working for. I'll read you a couple of different passages. This is from the very beginning. We find ourselves in a time of reckoning, at an inflection point for humanity. What we will inflect toward is not clear. It has not yet been determined how much global temperature will increase, although we know that we're already past where we thought we shouldn't go past, how much sea level will rise, how we will adapt to the inevitable and prevent the worst, or how we will treat each other amidst it all. Set aside your resignation and nihilism. There is a wide range of possible futures. Peril and possibility coexist. A few things feel clear about this world we must build together. There can be enough for each of us. There can be a home for each of us. There can be a role for each of us. The imperative is transformation, and the goal is to thrive. Even if that's all we know for sure, it's enough to get started. Now, will we get it right? I have no idea. It's a long shot, but we could. So again, every scientist, every person working deeply with this, who's made this their life's work, is in a place of uncertainty and in a place of deep belief that the beautiful world our hearts know is possible is always possible. And as Viktor Frankl said, no one can take that vision from us. That's our greatest strength as humanity, is our ability to imagine possibility and keep acting toward it. Like the people in concentration camps who did not allow their humanity to be taken from them and continued to serve each other and continued to look at the sunset and notice the beauty, even amidst what was unimaginably bleak. So this is just the last thing I'll read to you from this book. Who are we to give up on this planet or one another? We simply do not get to quit. Also, how do we keep moving forward despite the intimidating odds? It's normal to grapple with all of this, and the truth is, you don't need hope at all. As philosopher Joanna Macy has put it, it's okay not to be optimistic. Buddhist teachings say feeling that you have to maintain hope can wear you out. So just be present. And when you're worrying about whether you're hopeful or hopeless or pessimistic or optimistic, who cares? The main thing is that you're showing up, that you're here, and that you're finding ever more capacity to love this world, because it will not be healed without that. Here's the thing. Octopuses and rainbows and music and dinner parties and love and snow flurries and the aurora borealis all exist. The world is full of delights, even as it may also be spiraling toward conflagration and deluge. So when people perceive me as hopeful, I think that what they are actually seeing is that I am joyful. And thank goodness for the human ability to decouple hope from joy. My concern is that hope is insufficient. So I encourage you, in the words of Terry Tempest Williams, make vows to something deeper than hope. If not hope, then what? Truth, courage, solutions, love, collaboration and community. Possibility, that's a word I can wholeheartedly race toward. I find motivation for action in glimpses of what could be and in values instilled by my parents that say it is my responsibility to try. Without any guarantees of success, that's the non-attachment. The force that propels me is a simple and deep desire to be useful. So, I mean, I just like to use other people's words when they say it so well. This is what I'm going to end with. This is an oath, not that Ayana came up with, but another amazing solutionist named Oana Stanescu. It's a climate oath, but I think it's an oath for these times. It's deeply purposeful and beautiful. So as I'm reading this oath, find in it something that jumps out at you. That's sort of an action step that feels purposeful to you. Because in this new moon, we're being asked to act. It's not just a fluffy intention, oh, I think this is what I'd like to have in life. No, this is what I will commit to. This is the step I'm willing to take. That's what this time is asking for us, to put our thought, word, and deed into that deep coherence and see what that frequency makes possible. Okay, so here it is. On the majesty of turquoise seas and fireflies and aspen trees, on the honor of our parents, our ancestors, and humans to come, on the wonders of laughter and sunshine, I make these devotions to climate solutions for my community and for our magnificent planet. First, move from I to we. We will expand our sense of interdependence. We will rein in our sense of individualism. We will ask, what should we do together? Survival is collective. Our fates are intertwined. Second, do no harm. We will restore and heal, not pollute and deplete. We will regenerate ecosystems and our own resolve. We will live lightly as part of the earth. Accountability, generosity, and sweetness. Third, less is more. We will expand our creativity and contract our consumerism. We will conserve and distinguish between needing and wanting. We will be gentle with our own imperfections and others. There is such a thing as enough. Possibility exists. This is a world of our making. We can remake it, remix it, restore it, rebalance it. The path of least resistance is only one of many paths. I will be part of getting it right. We will be part of getting it right.
Thank you.